Welcome to the Resentment-Free Relationships Podcast. I'm Becky Smith, your certified life coach, here to help you go from exhausted and resentful to feeling connected and confident in your relationships. Are you ready? Let's go. Hello and welcome to the podcast. Today I have on a special guest, Danita Brummer, and she is a fellow coach, LCS certified coach, creation coach, and a lot of other certifications and qualifications that she is going to tell us about today. But I'm so excited because she is a trauma coach. She has a fantastic podcast where I'm just starting to delve into it and learn more about it. I feel like it is the next level or the next step in my coaching journey. I really want to learn as much as I can about it. But first of all, Danita, will you just introduce yourself to my audience?
Yeah, I mean, you did a great job. I'm Danita Brummer. I live in the Denver area. I have three teenagers. In a couple of months, my oldest will be 20, so I won't be able to say that anymore. Husband, I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and I've been coaching for about 5 years.
Now, I wanted you to tell us your story about how you have gotten to become a trauma coach.
Such a great story. So I am a high achiever. I graduated valedictorian. I went to college, pretty much the first college graduate in my both sides of my family. And I kind of was sort of running and always like doing the next thing. It's time to get married. It's time to have babies. I did all those things. And I found myself at a place in my life when after my three kids were born, I think my youngest was 2 or 3 years old, just feeling so miserable. And I didn't know, honestly, the thought that went through my head was, if I am so blessed, I have the gospel, I have a great husband, we're healthy, we've got money in the bank, all of these things. There's no reason for me to feel so miserable. Why do I feel so bad? Why can't I feel good? And I kind of had that in the back of my mind. And we moved to Germany for a year. I was homeschooling my kids at the time, so it was just a great opportunity to pick up and move. But what that did is it sort of thrust me in a little bit of a depression. I was like, I got to do something. I have to go to therapy or something. But being in Germany, I was kind of scared to do that. So I thought maybe there's like a podcast I can listen to. And that's when I searched in my podcast app, I found Jody Moore, and I just dove into mindset coaching. And I loved it. And it now looking back, I can see how it almost reinforced some of the trauma that I had or some of the coping mechanisms for the trauma that I had. It kept me in my head. And it kind of kept me in that like seeking, searching phase. And so I was doing that. I had prayed, like, honestly, I never thought that I would have a business. I never thought that I would have a career, so to speak. I assumed someday I would go back to college. I have an undergraduate degree in psychology. And I thought, you know, someday when my kids are grown, maybe I'll go back. But I didn't really think I would have a business. But through prayer and personal revelation, I was led to become a certified coach. And then I was specifically led to become an entrepreneur. I remember praying about that. I'm trying to do this business thing. I'm not making nothing. My first year, I think I made $8,000. Second year, $30,000. Third year, I let myself hustle and I made $50,000 that year. And it was horrible because I basically was not paying attention to my kids, my family. I was just like working 24/7. And there came a point where I was sitting with a coach and she asked me about a vision, like, what do you see yourself doing in the future? And it's not like other coaches had asked me that in the past, but this was kind of the first time that I really, I don't know, maybe I felt really safe with this coach. So I think it was the first time that I truly said what I wanted and felt. And I told her, I said, when I close my eyes and think about myself in the future, like 5 or 10 years out, I see myself speaking on stages. I said, that is so weird because I don't want to speak. I don't want to be a speaker. I don't want to be on stages. And she asked me more about it. And I was explaining to her that when I imagine this, it feels like I'm on stage and I'm naked and the spotlights are in my eyes and the audience is silent and they're just waiting for me. And it's like so embarrassing. And it just feels terrifying to me. I like to give talks in church. I don't mind speaking in smaller groups or in front of people that I know, but it was such a visceral feeling that it was almost like something was coming up my chest into my throat, stopping me and going, "Oh, I can't talk." And in that moment, I was like, "Oh, this is trauma, I think." I didn't even really know that much about trauma. I knew trauma was a thing. You know, I knew I had experienced a lot of things in my childhood and growing up years that people would consider traumatic, but it was almost like the spirit's voice was saying, "This is trauma." And I realized that if I wanted to be successful in my business, that I had to go figure that out. I searched a coach that specifically deals with trauma. It was a name that had popped up from time to time in a couple groups that I was in. And I started listening to her podcast. And then I started getting kind of this urgency, like, "Oh my gosh, I have to reach out to her right now because she might be fully booked. These are old podcasts. I might not even be able to work with her." And so I reached out to her and she was still doing one-on-one. And so I worked with her one-on-one and it was so different than any coaching that I had seen or participated in, because she didn't ask me about, "Well, what are you thinking?" We didn't talk very much on the sessions. It was really, she would open every session with, "How are you feeling today?" And then I would talk a whole bunch, kind of download to her. And then when she would bring it back to, "Oh, how does that feel in your body?" And then we would just stay in my body and I would explain the sensations and the urges and all of this. I felt like I made more progress working with her for 6 months than I had in like 4.5 years of being in memberships and hiring one-on-one coaches that were doing mindset before that. I just became a big believer in that. And she had a certification. And so I went all in. And I was just like, "Yeah, I need to get certified. I need to learn more about trauma. I need to learn more about the nervous system." And that where I am today. And also in that time, or right before that, right before I decided to do that, I felt the spirit saying, "You're a trauma coach." And I was like, "No, trauma is for therapy. I can't be a trauma coach." I had all this stuff coming up about what was allowed and, you know, all of that. And so I had some decisions to make about that, about what to call myself and am I actually going to coach people around trauma or am I just doing this for myself? But I just couldn't ignore the voice that just kept insistently saying, "You're a trauma coach." And to be honest, sometimes I still wrestle with that voice. Sometimes I'm like, "Oh, people will think that trauma is not for coaching." And I just have to trust that like God is leading me in the right direction for me.
Okay. And there's, when we say trauma, it is kind of a buzzword right now, right?
Totally. We hear it
everywhere. I've heard it said big T trauma and little T trauma. Big T trauma can be things like you were in the war, you were attacked. Those are big T trauma. Maybe what you coach on is little T trauma, which I had a therapist friend, her definition was just wounds and thinking errors that we don't really realize. It's more than just the thinking that's going into the body and how we're feeling. I'd love to hear more of your understanding and definition of trauma.
A really simple way to think of trauma is anything that was too much too fast or too little for too long. So it's sort of two buckets, which we would call abuse and neglect. And you are right. I don't generally work with the big T trauma. I can, but it's not my area because it's not what I have experienced. I would call the big T trauma shock trauma. Okay. So things like war or a car accident or time defined one event. Little T trauma is more of the everyday kind of little wounds that are inflicted upon us. Typically emotionally is how we think of that. So this could be sort of attachment wounds, how our parents showed us love or didn't show us love or supported us or didn't support us. Generally speaking, it's complex trauma because it happens over time. So it's not time defined. So it could be like an ongoing abuse if you were sexually abused or, you know, emotional or physical abuse, any kind of abuse. typically happens, it doesn't just happen one time, right? It's sort of like ongoing. Every time you meet that cousin or that uncle or aunt or whatever it is, those complex traumas are sort of those ongoing. It happens as we develop. So developmental traumas, sometimes these words are interchangeable and different experts will use different words. But I particularly, because this is kind of my story, focus in on the developmental and the attachment wounds, which is for me, a lot of the stuff that happened that was traumatic was before I was even speaking. It was when I was a baby and a toddler, which is why we say trauma is not just about what you think. In the world of coaching, it's typically mindset coaching. And so it's about your thoughts, creating your feelings, driving your actions. In the world of trauma, it's really more about your nervous system state creates a story. Especially when we're young, we have these nervous system states, either an activated state or a shutdown state. Those are the two big ones. And we want to make sense of it. We want to understand it so that we can avoid that in the future, so we know what to do. And when we have traumas that happen before we're even verbal, we can't really attribute that to our thoughts. It's really more our nervous system interpreting, perceiving the world and the dangers or the not dangers of the world. And then from those nervous system states, we tend to create stories around it. As we grow, we put words to those stories.
Can you give an example?
For example, for me, something that I always come back to is shame. And my body, my nervous system goes to kind of my default when there's something threatening or dangerous, it goes to a shutdown. So I don't really get like activated and I want to run away or I want to fight my way. I just automatically go to go hide, go get in bed, go to sleep, go shut the world out, read a book, that kind of a thing. The story around that I developed from a very, very young age was I'm not good enough. My parents would call me very shy when I was young. I didn't talk very much. The world just felt so threatening to me. And I do still hold that sense in my body. When I think about myself as a five-year-old, the world just felt so big and threatening. I never knew what to do or how to be. I just sort of developed this story that everything is scary. I'm not good enough. There were other things too. I sucked my thumb until I was, I think, 7 or 8 years old. And at first, my parents were like, it's fine. She's a kid, whatever. And then eventually, I'm sure this happened after I went to kindergarten, they started to get concerned. She hasn't stopped sucking her thumb yet. I started getting these messages that there was something wrong with me because I was so quiet and because I sucked my thumb and all these other reasons. So that's a story that we tend to create when we're in a shutdown or a freeze response. Other stories are, I just can never do it. I'm not capable. Mm-hmm. You might hear people describing their inner world as sluggish or heavy. Mm-hmm. These are just like patterns that come out. We think of our culture and the words we use in our culture, and we think of these feelings that lots of people feel, and we just start to create these patterns of how we describe our inner worlds. For another example, for the activated state, you might hear things like, it's really hot, or this sense of urgency, a story about urgency, like I never have enough time, I gotta go, right? Those kinds of things. Those are typical stories that come out of a nervous system state. If I like to listen for when people say, my whole life, I've always been a jokester or whatever it is. I think, oh, that's interesting. This must be how their nervous system state learned to be in the world. Mine learned to try to not be in the world. I just wanted to be small and quiet and blend into the background. But other people want to be the goof off or they want to fight all the time. As coaches, I think it's just so valuable to know that sometimes the state of the nervous system comes first and then a story is created. And sometimes we create the story and then it kind of drives the feeling. So it can go either way. It's just good to know that it could go both ways.
That's really interesting to me. And have a big smile on my face because we have very similar stories. I was very shy. I sucked my thumb forever. Up until coaching, I thought that my shyness was a problem that needed to be fixed. Not just a problem, it was an inherent character flaw.
Yes, me too.
That I needed to fix. And I spent so much time, energy trying to fix that part of me, you know, and that is one gift that I really felt like I did get from coaching was understanding, and the mindset coaching was really understanding that there was nothing wrong with me and that I did get out of it, that it is a fear response. And it was a way of protecting myself. And now that you're saying it was a nervous system state, and that all just makes so much sense to me.
Yeah. The other thing that I have done since a young child is play with my hair. I like twirl and feel my hair.
I had a blanket that I did that with.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So these are coping mechanisms, right? These are ways that we soothe ourselves. Mm. I mean, even infants that suck their thumbs, we know this intuitively. We know this is a soothing action. If you think about a kaleidoscope of soothing techniques that we adopt, some people do more than others. It just kind of gives you a sense of, oh, this person probably doesn't feel very safe in the world. They need a lot of different techniques to keep themselves soothed.
Well, what's coming up for me is like how smart our minds and bodies.
Yes. Like
to figure that out. And what I used to think of as a flaw, I now think of as a superpower. Isn't that smart? How it just kind of put up this wall and shut down and was, no, I'm going to protect myself. This is scary. And like you said, the self-soothing and the coping mechanisms. And I sucked my thumb a lot longer than you did. So I guess I needed it a little longer.
Yeah. And that's something I tell my clients all the time, because we come to these certain behaviors that we don't like about ourselves and we judge it and we have shame or whatever, sometimes even anger. Why can't I stop? And I try to help them reframe it in this way of, isn't your body and your brain so incredibly intelligent? That's one of the principles of coaching that I adopt is the client always makes sense. You always make sense. We just don't always know why.
And finding it is really an aha, you know, and understanding why you are the way you are. And that will always be a part of me, but I don't need it as much. I tell people that I've overcome shyness, and I don't know if I even want to say that anymore because
it wasn't the shyness. You feel more safe in your world.
Hmm.
I literally just posted on Instagram a few days ago about that. It was something that I think a client said something to me and it sparked this thought. Yeah. And I posted on there, I wasn't shy. I just never felt safe.
Which is totally true.
Yeah. The world is big and scary. Look at all the things happening in the world now as adults that we know.
Yeah.
It's okay that the world is big and scary. It's okay that we have these coping mechanisms.
Yeah. And it was helpful for me to understand even what shyness is, that shyness is a fear of social judgment. And judgment is scary. And so that's what you're saying. The reason it's gone away is because I feel safer now. Yeah. Because I have all these tools now. Because I know I can feel any emotion and I'm not going to die. So that's really the key. And I have to find a better word than overcome. I have outgrown.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a better word.
Yeah, it's kind of like a snake skin that we don't need it anymore. I feel like that resonates with me. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I have a kid who's shy and I have a kid who's not shy, but is quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And so yes, they're very different. And that has taught me a lot because my one kid who is quiet, she actually really likes the spotlight and she does not care what people think about her. She's got a pretty tough skin. I don't think she fears judgment in terms of that definition. But I have another kid who's very much like me and does not want any amount of spotlight. He doesn't even like me to tell him that he's handsome. Mm. He's like, no, mom, no. Because it like puts the spotlight on him and makes him feel uncomfortable. He's very shy. He does not want to be in any center of any circle. And he's actually not quiet. He's very loud, very jokestery and witty and all that. It's actually quite illuminating to separate those two out, I think. Just kind of a little side note.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like the intention of this, but that's another landmark thing for me was the book Quiet. Mm-hmm. Yes. That was just, oh my goodness, this is me. I get it now. There's a difference between shy and quiet. There's a difference between shy and introverted.
The other way I like to define trauma is an emotional splinter.
Okay.
Like an emotion that we experience, but it's too big for us in the moment. So our body, our nervous system packs it away in its infinite intelligence to protect us and keep us safe. And it sort of gets embedded. That's always the word that I like to use because it's still there, but it might not be on the surface. It's still sort of affecting us, usually in really subconscious ways we don't even realize. And that's part of why I started with, I was valedictorian. I graduated from college because now that I know what I know, I've done lots of deep dives into the nervous system and trauma and all of that. I think sort of my high achieverness was a way to kind of run from the terrible, awful things that were happening at home. Home for me growing up was not a very safe place. My parents fought all the time. It was very hot and cold. We never knew what to expect. Sometimes we would get home from school and they would be loving on each other, and sometimes they'd be screaming at each other. So it was like this walking on eggshells feeling all the time, like what's happening? What can I expect? All of that. School was a really safe place for me. There were things that happened at school that weren't the best of things, but overall it was a much safer place. It was a place where I felt seen by my teachers, where I could excel and be good at something, where I just really felt more safe at school. I look at my parents who were drug addicts and alcoholics, and my mom had me when she was 17, sex, drugs, and alcohol. And I think I could have gone down that route. Mm-hmm. I think it would have been very easy for me in my family culture. But instead, I kind of threw myself into this good student mode. Mm. And so it's sort of a socially acceptable way to cope with things that are hard, be the good student. But it still felt like I was running. Felt like I was running away from things up until, I'm 43 years old, up until probably 3-4 years ago. Mm. And that was the point when I was with that coach and I was describing to her about, you know, feeling like I'm on the stage, but the lights are in my eyes. I told her, I just feel like I don't have any energy to run anymore. Mm. Like my whole life, it was like the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And I just got to a point of almost burnout. And I just, I can't run anymore. And that's when she started asking, have you ever thought about going to therapy for your trauma? And planting those kinds of seeds in my mind. And that's where the last couple of years, as I've done a lot of work on myself to heal these wounds, I've come to a place where I don't have to run anymore, where I feel connected and grounded and creative. And, you know, of course, our nervous systems are meant to go in and out of these activated states or shutdown state, but we're not meant to be in it all the time. It's not supposed to be a permanent state. So this is what I tell people. If you feel like everything is always urgent, there might be some trauma there to resolve. You're not supposed to live like that permanently. If you feel like you can never, you're always incapable, everything feels heavy and too much, there might be some trauma there to resolve. And honestly, one thing I think of thinking about my clients is it doesn't have to be a big thing that happened to you. Like, I know plenty of people who have wonderful, wonderful parents, have amazing growing up. But the truth is, we just don't all get what we need. We don't all get the attention or the support. Our parents came from generations where they had to work really hard and they were exhausted. And there's a difference between who our parents were and what they gave us and what we actually needed. Humans are so good at reading other humans and making stories out of what we see or don't see. It's the thoughts and the feelings are so interconnected.
Yeah.
I would just say trauma is typically when our feelings are too much for us to handle, too overwhelming, or when it's lack and emptiness. Okay. That's more kind of the neglect side. If we didn't get what we needed in terms of attention and love and support, which probably all of us have had instances of that, it's going to be worse if it's kind of continual over and over again. I have a story about that. When I was 5, my dad lost his job and he was a trash man. So he would be one of the guys hanging on the side of the trash truck, picking up the trash. And I was the kid that would wake up early. And my parents would still be sleeping and I would just be very quiet and I would turn on Looney Tunes and I would turn the volume way down and his alarm went off and I went into his room and I stood next to his bed and I was, I don't know what to do. Should I wake him up? His alarm is going off. Maybe he wants to wake up, but no, he's a grown up. So maybe he knows and maybe he doesn't want to wake up. And so I had this like battle inside of my head. At some point he woke up on his own. And he looked at me and he looked at the alarm clock and he flew out of bed and he threw some clothes on and he rushed out the door and he came home like an hour later and he said, I lost my job. I remember him asking me, why didn't you wake me up? Hmm. And I was just like, I don't know. I don't know. I didn't have the words to say, I didn't know if I should. I mean, you're the grown up and you're the one that should know. But the alarm was going off and I was just really confused. And from that point in time, he lost his job. He couldn't find another job. I was finishing kindergarten. We lived in this camping trailer, my little sister and me and my mom and my dad, until I finished kindergarten. And then we had to move. We moved from San Diego to Eastern Washington State to where my dad's parents had retired. And my mom was very unhappy. My grandparents didn't like her very much. At least that's the story she always told. And my dad had to work really hard. It was just hard. And I, for 35 years, blamed myself. I had this story because of that confusion. I froze. This is why I say my body goes to a freeze state. I thought it was my fault that my dad lost his job and we had to move and my mom was unhappy and my parents fought and all the things that happened after that. One day I was like 35 or 40 years old and I went, oh my gosh, I was 5. It wasn't my fault. But nobody told me. Nobody literally said the words, this isn't your fault. We're the adults. We're going to figure this out. So I just adopted that. And I will also say I'm an oldest child. I kind of like tend to take on a lot of responsibility. So that's one of those things that we create these stories in our heads. And when nobody corrects the story or even asks, like, what do you think about this? That there's no like opportunity. Oh, by the way, mom and dad, I think that I blame myself. I think that it's my fault. There just is no opportunity to correct that. And so I just carried that story for so long.
Yeah. So you just carry it into adulthood and you don't even realize. And so that's why it is good to address it.
I think parents are getting better at this, right? Line upon line, generational line upon generational line, where they're becoming more sensitive to what is going on in the inner world of my child. So I think we're making progress.
Well, and I'm wondering how this relates. My audience is generally has a habit of people pleasing or of codependency. The name of the podcast is Resentment-Free Relationships. And I'm thinking of being in a particular relationship and feeling, when you're around that person, feeling fear. I have one of my clients say that this just this visceral fear comes up when she thinks about this person. So I'm wondering what advice you would give to her or what you would say to this person.
Probably what I would say is, okay, this might be a time to distance yourself if you can, or set some boundaries, because there has to be a baseline of safety. So if fear is the thing that is coming up, we're always in that activated or shut down state of how do I get away from the fear? So we do want to give ourselves some time or space. If we can, it's not always possible, but if we can, to kind of feel what does safe feel like? And she could maybe explore that in her mind too of, okay, I know I feel fear when I think of this person, but what about another person? Who do you feel the most safe around? And you can do a lot in just your imagination of bringing in, there's a tool that we use, imagine a competent protector. Somebody, it could be somebody real, it could be somebody who's already passed on, maybe a grandparent or something like that. It could be a fictional character. Like if you're with Dumbledore, would you feel safe? It could be a pet. anything, any other living creature that makes you feel safe, and then start exploring, what does that feel like? Because with trauma, healing from trauma, we're both trying to resolve the fear and or whatever emotion it is. And we're also trying to expand our ability to be with safety, with joy, with some of those positive emotions. So that's probably the first step I would say, is start exploring what safety feels like. And then the next step would be, can you hold both fear and safety at the same time as kind of a bridge?
And that's interesting that you would say that you have to work on being able to hold the positive emotions.
Yes, because what happens when we're always in a danger response, activated, we're either fighting or running or shutting down, is that that grows, that part of our nervous system grows. And the part of our nervous system that's calm and creative and connected and grounded, that's what we would call our window of tolerance, that's where we want to live most of our lives, it shrinks. And so for those of us that view the world as a very negative, dangerous place, or we have growing up, we've kind of, I like to think of it like a muscle. We've built the muscle of running and fighting and shutting down. And so we're really good at that. We're not so good at, how does joy feel? How does love feel? How does it feel to be safe? So it's working on both at the same time, spiraling both of those skill sets at the same time, of allowing the fear, letting it be there to show our bodies that we're not going to die when we think of this person, but also growing the ability to feel safe.
I think that's super helpful and a really good place to start in a relationship that you feel stuck in, right?
Yeah.
Do I feel safe in this relationship?
There's so much work to be done in ourselves when the people we love respond or react in a way that makes us feel things. Speaking about the people pleasing, this is something I've worked on a lot. I have codependent tendencies as well. I think it comes from that chaotic environment and having to watch my parents' emotional states to know how to be. The one thing I will say that was super helpful for me is that I had to be willing to feel bad. Because people pleasing is, we do all the things so that other people will feel good so that we can feel good.
Yeah.
Right?
You got it right on.
and so I had to learn, and I did this with my coach. We talked about, I have an amazing, wonderful husband, but I was still like wanting him always to feel good about me, or, you know, whatever. My coach told me at one point, don't do the thing that you have the urge to do. So if it's like, oh, what can I help you with? How can I fix this? You just sit back and you don't do it. And that feels terrible.
It does. It does. And I've been trying to coach one of my clients that way. She's like, well, what can I do? How can I fix it? I'm like, you don't.
Yes.
You don't.
And that's so foreign.
Yes.
Because some of us were used to going in and doing the thing and fixing, making it right. And so to not do anything, it feels terrible to us. And it changes the dance, right? It changes the expectations. I started with this place of, am I willing to feel bad right now?
Yeah.
Like, I hear my husband is home and I can tell that he's upset about something. I'm going to just not go ask him about it.
What? What would that be like? What?
Yeah. So this is why the bulk of the work I do is all about feelings. And I throw in a little bit of mindset. Sometimes that's helpful, but it's really the bulk of the work with trauma is, can I be with this feeling? Can I let it be there? Can I not resist it? What does it feel like? And I couldn't do that on my own. That's why I hired a coach, because I kind of intellectually knew what the work was, but I was, I can't do it. I don't know what, how. And so many of my clients are the same way. I need the support to be even able to say, what does it feel like when I feel shame or when I feel angry? We don't slow down in our lives to actually answer those questions. And sometimes we can't unless we have the co-regulation from someone else, which is
we need that guide. So if someone's resonating with what you're saying, how would they work with you?
My podcast is called Regulated and Restored, regulated for nervous system regulation and restored for the Restored Church of Jesus Christ. So I typically work with LDS moms. Not all of my clients are LDS. Not all of my clients are moms. I'm on Instagram at Danita Bremmer, and I have two offers. I have a small group membership because it's very small right now. I've got about 12 people in there, and that's the work we do. We focus primarily on feeling, somatic work, urges, what's happening in the body. And I also do one-on-one with clients if they feel like they need a little bit more support, or sometimes I'll be the one to say, it feels like you need more support. Are you interested? My group is called Presence. The idea is we have to be present to our inner world and our outer world. We're building that skill. My Presence members do get a discount on one-off private sessions. So that's kind of a benefit for being in the group. But if you feel like I don't want to be in a group, it doesn't feel safe to be in front of other people, get coached in front of other people, then one-on-one is definitely an option. So those are the two ways to work with me. I also really love Voxer.
Yeah.
And I offer that for free. If anybody wants to connect with me, you can definitely connect on Instagram. That's my favorite place to be. But if you like Voxer as well, if you're a verbal processor, then that might be a fun place to hang out. And I'm at Danita Bremmer on Voxer as well.
Okay. Well, it was delightful, Danita. I learned a lot. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. I don't take it lightly that you're sharing me with your audience. So
thank you. Have you been sitting on the fence about coaching? Curious about it, wanting to try it, but not sure if it's worth your time or money? Well, this month is the perfect time to try it out. I have a Black Friday deal for you where you're going to get Marco Polo coaching, where you have access to me on your time that fits into your busy schedule, with an added bonus of 2 Zoom calls in the month where you get real-time coaching from me. And all of this is for the price of 1 coaching session that I normally charge. You're going to get an entire month of coaching for the price of 1 session. So send me an email, send me a DM, and let's get started.